Chapter 34. Self-Surpassing. Will to truth do you call it, you wisest ones, that which impels you and makes you ardent? Will for thinkableness of all being, thus do I call your will. All being would you make thinkable, for you doubt with good reason whether it be already thinkable. But it shall accommodate and bend itself to you, so wills your will. Smooth shall it become, and subject to the spirit, as its mirror and reflection. That is your entire will, you wisest ones, as a will to power, and even when you speak of good and evil, and estimates of value. You would still create a world before which you can bow the knee. Such is your ultimate hope and ecstasy. The ignorant, to be sure, the people, they are like a river on which a boat floats along. And in the boat sits the estimates of value, solemn and disguised. Your will and your valuations have you put on the river of becoming. It betrays to me an old will to power, what is believed by the people as good and evil. It was you, you wisest ones, who put such guests in this boat, and gave them pomped and proud names, you and your willing will. Onward, the river now carries your boat. It must carry it. A small matter if the rough wave foams and angrily resists its keel. It is not the river that is your danger and the end of your good and evil, you wisest ones, but that will itself, the will to power, the unexhausted, procreating life will. But that you may understand my gospel of good and evil, for that purpose will I tell you my gospel of life and the nature of all living things. The living thing did I follow. I walked in the broadest and narrowest paths to learn its nature. With a hundred-faced mirror did I catch its glance when its mouth was shut, so that its eye might speak to me, and its eye spoke to me. And wherever I found living things, there heard I also the language of obedience. All living things are obeying things. And this I heard secondly. Whatever cannot obey itself is commanded. Such is the nature of living things. This, however, is the third thing which I heard, namely, that commanding is more difficult than obeying, and not only because the commander bears the burden of all obeyers, and because this burden readily crushes him. An attempt and a risk seem all commanding to me, and whenever it commands, the living thing risks itself thereby. Yea, even when it commands itself, then also must it atone for its commanding. Of its own law must it become the judge and avenger and victim. How does this happen? So did I ask myself. What persuades the living thing to obey and command and even be obedient in commanding? Hearken now to my word, you wisest ones. Test it seriously, whether I have crept into the heart of life itself and into the roots of its heart. Wherever I found a living thing, there I found will to power, and even in the will of the servant found I the will to be master. That to the stronger, the weaker shall serve, thereto persuades his will who would be master over a still weaker one. That delight alone he is unwilling to forgo. And as a lesser surrenders himself to the greater, that he may have delight and power over the least of all, so does even the greatest surrender himself and stakes life for the sake of power. It is the surrender of the greatest to run risk and danger and play dice for death. And where there is sacrifice and service and love glances, there also is the will to be master. By byways does a weaker then slink into the fortress and into the heart of the mightier one, and there steals power. And this secret spoke life herself to me. Behold, said she, I am that which must ever surpass itself. To be sure, you call it will to procreation, or impulse towards a goal, towards the higher, remoter, more manifold, but all that is one and the same secret. Rather would I succumb than disown this one thing. And verily, where there is succumbing and leaf falling, lo, there does life sacrifice itself for power. That I have to be struggle and becoming and purpose and cross-purpose. Ah, he who defines my will divines well also what crooked paths it has to tread. Whatever I create, and however much I love it, soon must I be adverse to it and to my love, so wills my will. And even you, discerning one, are only a path and footstep of my will. Verily, my will to power walks even on the feet of your will to truth. He certainly did not hit the truth who shot it at the formula, will to existence. That will does not exist. For what is not cannot will. That, however, which is in existence, how could it still strive for existence? Only where there is life is there also will. Not, however, will to life, but so teach I you, will to power. Much is reckoned higher than life itself by the living one, but out of the very reckoning speaks the will to power. Thus did life once teach me, and thereby, you wisest ones, do I solve you the riddle of your hearts. Verily I say to you, good and evil which will be everlasting, it does not exist. Of its own accord must it ever surpass itself anew. With your values and formula of good and evil, you exercise power, you valuing ones. And that is your secret love, and the sparkling, trembling, and overflowing of your souls. But a stronger power grows out of your values, and a new surpassing. By it breaks eggs and eggshell. And he who has to be a creator in good and evil, verily, he has first to be a destroyer and break values in pieces. Thus does the greatest evil pertain to the greatest good. That, however, is the creating good. Let us speak thereof, you wisest ones, even though it be bad. To be silent is worse. All suppressed truths become poisonous. And let everything break up which can break up by our truths. Many a house is still to be built. Thus spoke Zarathustra. Chapter 35. The Sublime Ones. Calm is the bottom of my sea. Who would guess that it hides droll monsters? Unmoved is my depth, but it sparkles with swimming enigmas and laughter. A sublime one saw I today, a solemn one, a penitent of the spirit. Oh, how my soul laughed at his ugliness! With upraised breast, and like those who draw on their breath, thus did he stand, the sublime one, and in silence. O'erhung with ugly truths, the spoil of his hunting, and rich in torn raiment, many thorns also hung on him, but I saw no rose. Not yet had he learned laughing and beauty. Gloomy did this hunter return from the forest of knowledge. From the fight with wild beast returned he home. But even yet a wild beast gazes out of his seriousness, an unconquered wild beast. As a tiger does he ever stand, on the point of springing. But I do not like those strange souls. Ungracious is my taste towards all those self-engrossed ones. And you tell me, friends, that there is to be no dispute about taste and tasting. But all life is a dispute about taste and tasting. Taste. That is weight at the same time, and scales and wear. And alas, for every living thing that would live without dispute about weight and scales and wear. Should he become weary of his sublimeness, this sublime one, then only will his beauty begin, and then only will I taste him and find him savory. And only when he turns away from himself will he overleap his own shadow, and verily into his sun. For too long did he sit in the shade. The cheeks of the penitent of the spirit became pale. He almost starved on his expectations. Contempt is still in his eye, and loathing hides in his mouth. To be sure, he now rests, but he has not yet taken rest in the sunshine. As a white ox would I like to see him, which snorting and lowing, walks before the plowshare. And his lowing should also laud all that is earthly. Dark is still his countenance. The shadow of his hand dances upon it. O'ershadowed is still the sense of his eye. His deed itself is still the shadow upon him. His doing obscures the doer. Not yet has he overcome his deed. To be sure, I love in him the shoulders of the ox, but now do I want to see also the eye of the angel. Also, his hero will has he still to unlearn. An exalted one shall he be, and not only a sublime one. The ether itself should raise him, the willless one. He has subdued monsters, he has solved enigmas, but he should also redeem his monsters and enigmas. Into heavenly children should he transform them. As yet has his knowledge not learned to smile and to be without jealousy. As yet has his gushing passion not become calm and beauty. Verily, not in satiety shall his longing cease and disappear, but in beauty. Gracefulness belongs to the munificence of the magnanimous. His arm across his head, thus should the hero repose. Thus should he also surmount his repose. But precisely to the hero is beauty the hardest thing of all. Unattainable is beauty by all ardent wills. A little more, a little less. Precisely, this is much here. It is the most here. To stand with relaxed muscles and with unharnessed will, that is the hardest for all of you, you sublime ones. When power becomes gracious and descends into the visible, I call such condescension beauty. And from no one do I want beauty so much as from you, you powerful one. Let your goodness be your last self-conquest. All evil do I accredit you, therefore do I desire of you the good. Verily, I have often laughed at the weaklings, who think themselves good because they have crippled paws. The virtue of the pillar shall you strive after. More beautiful does it ever become, and more graceful, but more internally harder and more sustaining, the higher it rises. Yea, you sublime one, one day shall you also be beautiful, and hold up the mirror to your own beauty. Then will your soul thrill with divine desires, and there will be adoration even in your vanity. For this is the secret of the soul. When the hero has abandoned it, then only approaches it in dreams, the superhero. Thus spoke Zarathustra.